UCB.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and children of all ages. Welcome to the Unalaska Community Theater of the Air. Tonight's broadcast is based on a true story that happened toward the end of the 19th century in New York City. We hope you'll enjoy the holiday presentation of Yes, Virginia, There Is a Santa Claus.
My name is Mitchell, Edward P. Mitchell. I'm a newspaper man, and this is a newspaper story. You could have read about it on the front page of the New York Sun back in 1897. That's before people went out to the movies, long before people stayed home and listened to the radio, when people read books and told stories to their children, when people had to see things in their mind's eye and use their imagination. I'm going to ask you to use your imagination while I tell you that story. I'm going to ask you to imagine that you were in another time and in other places, the city room of a newspaper, my office. I'm the managing editor. A small, shabby flat in New York City, and, well, you'll understand as we go along. It's been said that every story has to have a start and a finish, a beginning and an end. A lot of stories end in a cemetery. This one starts there. A man named Frank P. Church, the best newspaper man who ever worked for me or anybody else, is at the side of a grave. In his pocket there is a gold watch, a watch that plays a tune as well as tells the time. And on the inside of the lid is a picture of his wife, Elizabeth. The inscription on the tombstone says, Elizabeth Church, born August 3rd, 1868, died December 24th, 1896, and daughter Eleanor died at birth. On Church's face, a two-day growth of beard, coat open, muffler undone. His eyes darkly caked and filmy. His gloved hand brushes away the cake snow on the tombstone. A pint of whiskey, nearly empty, is in his other hand. Church drinks and adjusts the flowers already placed at the base of the tombstone. He corks the bottle, puts it in his pocket. Church rises unsteadily. He removes the gold watch attached to his vest by a gold chain. He presses a stem. The lid opens. The tune plays. Frank Church speaks one word.
Elizabeth.
The 19th century was coming to a close. New York City was stretching and growing in all directions. The city was running out of room, so it had to grow up. The buildings were getting taller. Underground tunnels were being built. And across Manhattan Island, bridges were being constructed to carry thousands of people to and from their work. And people came from across the ocean to find work and a new life. Italians, Greeks, Poles, Germans, Scandinavians, Syrians, Jews, Irish, and all the rest. That good-looking fellow lifting a bale on the wharf is James O'Hanlon. I don't have to tell you where he came from. No, but I'll tell you where he's going. He's going down, tripped from behind by a bully named Goss.
What cause do you have for doing that?
You hit me, O'Hanlon. You swing your bell right at me and hit me.
Not true, Goss. I didn't touch you.
You call me a liar, Mick.
Now that's the truth.
You pushed him, Goss. I saw you.
Stay out of this, Guinea.
It's all right, Dom. Now excuse me, Goss. I've got work to do.
Did it again. Pushed me. Darn Mix coming over here, taking our jobs. Lousy potlickers.
Yeah, potlicker it is.
As dark fights go, it wasn't bad. Goss had the weight, but O'Hanlon had the speed and dexterity. Some of Goss's pals jumped in. So did O'Hanlon's friend, Dominic Donella. Goss went down from a right cross by O'Hanlon. That's when Chambers, the boss, showed up.
Okay, O'Hanlon. Donnelly, that's it for both of you. They told me you started the fight again, O'Hanlon. What is it with you Irish? You're an angry lot, aren't you?
Mr. Chambers, I had nothing to do with starting that fight.
You had something to do with finishing it. I'll give you that. You got spunk, O'Hanlon. But I need workers on this dock, not troublemakers. You're through. You too, Donnelly.
Mr. Chambers, please. Dom, I was just trying to help. I had...
It's okay, Jim.
It's not okay, darn it. Mr. Chambers, it's Goss who's always starting it. This time, he tripped me, called me Mick, and,
Potlucker, Goss may be a bigot and stupid at times, but he's been on the job a lot longer than the two of you. He pulls his weight, O'Hanlon.
And I don't pull our weight? How would you know? You're never out here in the cold and snow and rain. You don't lift anything but a pencil.
Mr. Chambers, I got two good men to take their place. My nephews, they...
You hear? That's the reason behind it. You're not going to be dumb enough to believe it.
Dumb now? Just wait a minute, Mick. I've had enough.
Mick it is. Well, so have I. There's other jobs.
Go find one.
We'll find two.
Virginia, why did you stop? I've got a rock or something in my shoe.
Maybe Santa Claus will bring you a new pair of shoes for Christmas, Virginia.
Yeah, maybe he'll drop them down your chimney.
These are just fine.
They were just fine a long time ago. Maybe they're just junk.
Leave Virginia alone.
Oh, foo. Besides, everyone knows there's no such thing as Santa Claus.
That's not true.
Oh, how would you know? Have you ever seen him, Virginia? I mean, in real life? Ever seen him?
Sure she has. We all have. There was one on the street corner last year ringing a bell asking for money.
And how about the one Gimbals who smelled like whiskeys and smokes?
Of course there is a Santa Claus, and of course Virginia hasn't seen him in real life, but that...
Then how do you believe in something you can't see, huh, Virginia?
I can't see God, but I believe in him.
Come on, are we gonna play or not?
December is a month of the longest nights and shortest days, and the coldest nights and days. It was one thing for James O'Hanlon and his friend Dominic Donnelly to say they would get another job. It was a different thing to find one. They couldn't, they didn't. One stop on James O'Hanlon's daily rounds was the back entrance of O'Hara's Bar and Grill, where his friend Shorty would leave a copy of yesterday's newspaper. Or, of course, the paper was the New York Daily Sun. Meanwhile, at the O'Hanlon's tiny apartment, James's wife, Evie, Virginia, and Sean, age 7, were at the kitchen table.
Mom, can I have more?
May I?
May I?
Well, Sean...
You may have the rest of mine. I'm all filled up.
Virginia!
I'll take it!
James, darling, you left in the dead of the night.
Heard there was a job at the power company.
And was there?
Yes, but there was also 100 men waiting to fill it. That's what comes from reading yesterday's newspaper.
You'll find something.
I will, but right now, I've come home to find some tea and to look at the bright, shiny faces of the O'Hanlon clan before they go off to school.
And learn more about President McKinley.
President-elect. Grover Cleveland is still in office to the end of the year.
James, will you be going out again?
I will as soon as I finish this bit of nourishment. And what about you, Evie? Have you had any breakfast?
I have.
Good. Well, then, I'll walk Virginia and Sean down the block.
I'm stopping at Maria's. Her mother is still pretty sick.
And Dominic's found no work, James?
No, he hasn't either. Well, come on, Sean, my bucko. We're off. You to learn and me to earn.
That's the spirit.
Trouble is, there's too darn much spirit and not enough jobs.
James, the children!
Yes, and aren't we lucky? They do favor your side of the family, don't they?
During those days and part of the nights, Frank P. Church was spending less and less time at his desk at the New York Sun and more time brooding and, yes, drinking. His favorite watering hole was a place frequented by other gentlemen of the press, though not nearly as frequently. Brody's Bar and Grill. The bartender was a thin Norwegian named Otho.
Can I get you something to eat, Mr. Church? Mr. Church, something to eat? Morning, Mr. Barrington.
Morning, Otto. Well, well, well. fellow newspapermen, take a look at who's here. Or is it still here?
Lie off, Cornelius.
Shut up, George. If it isn't the great roving reporter, the egalitarian editorializer, Frank himself Church.
Come on, Cornelius, let's go have a drink.
Friend and champion of the common man, would-be slayer of the capitalist dragon, dreaming up more drivel against aristocracy, like my uncle. Right, Mr. Church?
Leave him alone. Let's eat and get back to the paper.
Oh, sure. If you're looking for Dr. Livingston, Mr. Church, he's already been found in Africa, not in a bottle.
Those sounds you hear are the heartbeat and a pulse, not of a man or a woman, but of a newspaper. The city room of the New York Sun. That's right, a newspaper. Like a human being is a living creature, and every day the life of a newspaper is filled with joy and sorrow, triumph and tragedy, with victory and defeat, just as in the lives of the people who read it. It's my job to get that paper to those people. I moved past Andrea Borland's desk. She's our only female reporter. Past the copy boy, Teddy Murray, Frank Church's desk and typewriter. I pulled the sheet out of its roller. I crumbled the paper, opened a drawer, spotted an empty whiskey bottle, and slammed the drawer shut. Hey, Teddy, come here.
Yes, sir? Yes, sir, Mr. Mitchell.
Have you seen Frank?
He went out, Mr. Mitchell.
Out where?
Out the door. I don't know where, Mr. Mitchell.
When?
Hours ago. Maybe two.
Well, when he comes back in the door, tell him I want to see him right away.
Yes, sir.
He didn't give you any copy on that shame editorial, did he?
No, Mr. Mitchell.
I tossed the crumpled paper to Teddy. Here, study this. You might grow up to be a great reporter yourself someday.
Mr. Mitchell?
What is it, Miss Borland?
Did you like the story I did on the Vanderbilt ball?
I printed it, didn't I?
Well, half of it.
That's the half I liked.
Thank you again for the opportunity, Mr. Mitchell. Teddy.
Yes, Miss Borland? What do you need?
Some information.
I'm sorry, ma'am, but we don't serve ladies, escorted or unescorted.
Why not?
I don't know, ma'am. I just work here and we just serve gentlemen.
Have you served a gentleman named Church? Francis P. Church? Oh, yes, I see you have. Mr. Church? Mr. Church?
Well, well, well. And where's your tambourine?
What tambourine?
Aren't you from the Salvation Army?
No, I'm Andrea Borland from the New York Sun, and you know it.
Do I? What else do I know?
You ought to know that Mr. Mitchell is looking for you.
Well, Edward P. Mitchell is always looking for me lately.
He's also looking for the article.
Oh, yeah. The shame of greatness. What a shame.
As Church poured himself another drink, neither he nor Andrea Borland knew that Cornelius Barrington stood behind a post, listening to every word.
Mr. Church, it's probably none of my business.
That's right. Your business is society, isn't it, Miss Borland? Balls and teas and cotillions and such as that.
Mr. Church, have you finished the article?
Just about, Miss Borland. Just about finished. There has to be a finish to every story. Finish. Well, here, take a look.
Oh, Mr. Church.
After another bitter day, James O'Hanlon met his neighbor, Mrs. Goldstein, in the hallway of their apartment building.
Good afternoon, Mr. O'Hanlon. How did the day go?
Not as hoped, Mrs. Goldstein. Not as hoped.
Still no job?
Afraid not.
Well, something will turn up. Like my dear dad Saul used to say, the silver lining doesn't make the coat. It's the person wearing it.
Thank you, Mrs. Goldstein. I'll remember that.
Gottville's I'm in due. God be with you, Mr. O'Hanlon.
And it best be soon, Mrs. Goldstein. It best be soon.
Good afternoon, New York Sun.
Mr. Mitchell?
Yes, Miss Borland, what is it? You want back the other half of your Vanderbilt piece?
No, sir.
What have you got there? Something I overlooked for the front page?
I ran into Mr. Church when I went out to eat. He wasn't feeling very well.
Is that so?
But he asked me to give you this.
All right. Oh, the Shame of Greatness editorial. Just a minute. We have become a great nation, but at what cost? Ask the... I'll tell you something, Miss Borland.
Yes, sir?
Drunk Frank Church is still the best newspaper in this or any other town.
Yes, sir.
And Miss Borland?
Yes, sir?
Frank Church didn't always drink, only since his wife and baby died almost a year ago.
Getting colder every night, Evie. Where's your shawl? The one your mother sent you from Innisfree. The one she knitted for you to keep you warm, Evie?
The yarn from that shawl was enough to make 3 gifts, James, for my loved ones. Besides,
I can't afford to buy Christmas gifts.
I'm quite warm enough, thank you, with my whole family about me. And James O'Hanlon, if it's warmth I need, then I know where to find it.
Oh, do you now?
No fair tickling.
All's fair in love, and you know better than to mix with an old dockfighter like me.
Don't worry, Maria. They do that all the time. Hi, Mama. Papa.
How are my favorite little girls today?
Fine, Mr. O'Holland.
How's your mother, Maria?
Not so good, Mrs. O'Holland. She coughs a lot. It scares Papa and all of us.
I'm sure it must.
Your father's having no luck job hunting either, then.
No, sir.
Tell your father I'm very sorry. Evie, I feel like it's my fault.
I'll tell him, but don't feel bad, Mr. O'Holland. Papa says you're a fine man, and he says you two of you'll be working together again. Well, I'd better get going now.
I'll make some soup and bring it to your mother, Maria. That, and a prayer, is the best medicine of all.
Papa prays all the time. Sometimes I think God must have too much on his mind already. I'll tell Mom about the soup, and thank you.
How sick is she, Virginia? Do you know?
I hear the neighbors talking. They say Mrs. Dinelli might never get well.
Dear God.
But she will. That's all Maria wants for Christmas, for her mother to get well. That's all she wants from Santa Claus.
Good stuff, Frank, that Shame of Greatness editorial. Very good. You working on that Tammany Hall story?
Uh-huh.
How's it coming?
It's coming.
Will it be finished in time to give the boys at City Hall a Christmas present?
Well, it'll blow the pants off the boys at City Hall if you print it.
You write it, Francis. I'll print it.
Ask the captains of industry. Ask the robber barons. Ask the politicians about that bridge. That's the way I'd like to be able to write someday, Mr. Church, with both fists. Like John L. Sullivan. Yes, sir, the Shame of Greatness. A real humdinger.
First of all, Teddy, my boy, you've got to learn to unmix your metaphors.
What does that mean, Mr. Church?
It means I'm busy right now.
Sure, Mr. Church. I'll talk to you later.
Second of all...
Yes, sir?
In case you haven't heard, John L. Sullivan is no longer champion. He got beat by James J. Corbett.
Yes, sir, I know. As far as I'm concerned, John L. Sullivan will always be champion. Yes, sir, a real humdinger.
I watched as Frank pulled open a drawer, took out a quaint bottle of rye, slipped it into his pocket, rose, ripped out the sheet from his typewriter, crumpled it, tossed it into the wastebasket, and started to walk towards the men's room. But he paused at Andrea Borland's desk.
Miss Borland?
Yes?
I suppose you expect me to thank you.
For what?
Don't be precious, Miss Borland. I can't abide preciousness. For writing the article and bylining my name.
No, Mr. Church, I owe you thanks.
For what?
Do you remember lecturing at a journalism class at NYU a few years ago?
Not particularly.
Well, I was one of three females in that class. I was ready to quit until that day. It's because of what you said that I didn't. What you said and what you've written.
Miss Borland?
So please, accept my thanks. Besides, they were your ideas. All I did was rearrange a few words.
Well, if you say so. But that article... Well, tomorrow it'll be yesterday's newspaper, and you can wrap a fish in it.
What do you mean?
I mean that it's all that it's good for. Nothing that you or I or anybody else writes for a newspaper has a lifespan of more than 24 hours.
I don't believe that.
It's your privilege and your delusion. Now, excuse me. By the way, what happened to those other females in the class?
They got married.
And they showed uncommonly good common sense.
Get your New York Sun, New York Sun Daily.
As Virginia O'Hanlon made her way home against the cold and the wind, the dull afternoon suddenly abruptly became bright, and she caught sight of something shiny on the sidewalk. She stooped to pick it up.
A penny.
Daily, daily, get your Sun Daily.
How much?
2 cents.
Oh.
Did you want a paper, little girl?
Not now, thank you.
Okay. Get your Daily Sun right here, New York Sun.
And James O'Hanlon was in the alley behind O'Hara's Bar and Grill, where he hoped to pick up a copy of yesterday's New York Sun that would be left by his friend Shorty.
Ah, there you are again, Tabby. Looks like you could use a friend right now. Can't we all? How about it, Tabby? Want to be friends?
Help! Help! Somebody out there! Stop him! He's a thief! Police! Stop him!
As a thief ran out of O'Hara's back door holding a knife, he crashed into O'Hanlon, who grabbed him, and both men went down. The thief's knife ripped into O'Hanlon's sleeve, but James O'Hanlon's fist rendered the thief unconscious. O'Hanlon picked up the knife as two policemen appeared, along with several citizens and O'Hara himself.
Which one is it? Who's the thief?
They both look like thieves to me.
Grab him! Officers! He's the man you want! Look! See! He's got a knife! He's the thief!
No! That's not true. I was waiting out here when he came running out.
What were you waiting for?
My newspaper.
They sell them on the corner bomb, not the alley.
Yesterday's paper is in the trash. Surely one of you can identify this man as the thief.
I'm O'Hara, officers. I wish I could be sure, but he came at me from behind.
Where's your kitchen help?
Shorty?
Yes, Shorty. Shorty knows me. He knows I'm here every day waiting for the paper.
Shorty's on an errand.
Here, let me through here. I'm Sergeant Flynn. Let me through. All right, what's going on here?
A thief. One of these two came up from behind me, knocked me on the head, and stole my money from my cash box.
Well then, that's it. The thief would have the money on him, wouldn't he? Search us both.
The thief made a break for it, but O'Hanlon grabbed and slugged him. Sergeant Flynn searched and found the money.
So he would, and he does. All right, boys, here's your man.
You, whoever you are, I'll get you for this. You'll see. I'll get you and find you. I'll find you and get you for what you've done to me.
I wouldn't worry too much about him. Say, what is your name? I want to thank you, mister.
O'Hanlon. James O'Hanlon.
O'Hanlon, huh? That's a good name. Quick thinking and good with your fist, too. James O'Hanlon, I apologize for the mistake.
Can't thank you enough, Mr. O'Hanlon. It's true, business hasn't been good, too, lately. Can't offer a reward, but I might offer you and your family some fresh baked bread and some cold cuts.
Aye, thank you. But, well, no thanks.
Come now. It's the least I can do. Step inside and let me serve you a hot Irish while I get it ready for you. Tis the season, you know.
That it is, Mr. O'Hara. That it is.
And we'll see that you get your newspaper, too, Mr. O'Hanlon.
¶¶
Mrs. O'Hanlon's soup is helping Mama, I can tell. You're feeling better, aren't you?
Yes, Maria. Regina, please thank your mother again for stopping by.
I will, Mrs. Ginelli.
You'll get well, Mama, but you've got to try.
I will. I'll try to be well again, and be your mother, and be a wife to your father. Because God knows that.
Santa knows that, too.
Miss Borland? Andrea Borland? Just a minute, please.
Have we met?
Just now.
Then how do you know my name?
I'm a newspaper man, Cornelius Barrington. It's my business to know things and people. You're a darn fine writer, Miss Borland.
You've read my society pieces?
No, your article, The Shame of Greatness.
I don't know what you're talking about. Now, excuse me.
Sure you do. We both do. How'd you like to work for my paper, The Chronicle?
Do you own The Chronicle, Mr. Barrington?
No, but my uncle does. That makes it easy for both of us. Of course, you'd have to take a slightly different perspective of things.
What things?
Well, you could start by writing an exposé, call it The Ghost of Frank Church, about how you wrote that article, The Shame of Greatness.
I did no such thing, Mr. Barrington, and I strongly recommend that you be extremely careful about what you say or write.
Really? Why?
Because my uncle is a lawyer, a darn fine lawyer, and that makes it easy for the both of us.
That evening, Virginia and Sean were doing their homework. Evie was mending her husband's torn coat as James O'Hanlon sat in his chair with a copy of the New York Sun. Suddenly, he whacked the newspaper across the arm of his chair.
Ah, he's right. He's right, darn it. He's right.
What is it, James? Who's right?
The man who wrote this editorial in The Sun. It's titled, The Shame of Greatness.
What's it about?
About this country. Listen, we have become a great nation. But at what cost? Ask the red man, the black man, the elderly, the ill. We have built a great railroad across the 45 states and bridges across rivers. But there is no bridge of brotherhood. Why? Because there is no profit in that bridge. Ask the captains of industry. Ask the robber barons. Ask the politicians. Ask about that bridge. He's right, darn it, he's right. Hard to believe. 50 years ago, our people came to this country because they were starving in Ireland. Potato famine, indeed. High rents? Ha! It's no different here.
James.
Look at us. I tell you, we're as bad off.
Stop it. Stop feeling sorry for yourself. If I hear one more time how poor we are, how hungry we are. We've got our health, our family together, a roof over our heads, and blankets on our beds. And God. We have God. You can be poor if you want to, James O'Hanlon, but not me. I'm rich, and I grow richer every day of my life.
That you do, Evie. And so do we all. But I really don't think the Vanderbilts or the Morgans have anything to worry about.
Daddy, who are the Vanderbilts and the Morgans?
Oh, a couple of neighbors, just a little ways across Manhattan.
And here is your evening cape, Mr. Vanderbilt. Just as good as... as it was this morning, almost.
Thank you, ma'am.
Virginia, you look pensive.
What's pensive, Mama?
Oh, deep in thought. Having trouble with something, darling?
No, Mama, just thinking.
Oh, I've had the feeling there's been something on your mind.
More than something.
Want to come over here, sit on my lap, and talk about it?
I do.
All right. Then what is it?
Papa, is there a Santa Claus?
What makes you ask, Virginia?
Because all my friends say, well, almost all my friends say, there's no such thing. They say Santa Claus is a lie. They say somebody made him up.
Oh, they do. And what do you think, Virginia?
I want to think there is, but...
But what?
I'm just not sure. Please tell me true, Papa. Do you think there really is a Santa Claus?
See this paper, Virginia? This newspaper...
Uh-huh, I can sort of smell it, too.
Never mind that. This paper tells me what's going on around us. It's like taking a world trip. It keeps me informed, gives me confidence that people do indeed achieve their goals. It also makes me aware that some don't. But mostly, I choose to read the positive things, not the obituary notices.
What's the obit?
Obituary? It tells of death. I only read about life.
Papa, do you think your paper can tell me if there's a Santa Claus?
Virginia, if you see it in the sun, it's so.
Thanks, Papa.
Well, good night, Otto.
Good night, Mr. Church.
Good evening, Mr. Church.
Excuse me.
In a hurry? Well, that's all right. I've already conveyed my congratulations on that powerful editorial to Miss Borland. You see, Otto, Mr. Church knows all about shame. He attacks the captains of industry, the railroad builders, robber barons, the exploiters, while he shamelessly exploits the talents of his little lady friend. A nice cozy little setup you've got there, Church. What else does she do for you?
Barrington, you...
Don't think of getting physical, Mr. Church. In the first place, you're out of shape. In the second place, I've done some fighting. Captain of the Yale boxing team, you know.
Did a little fighting myself around Hell's Kitchen, Captain. Good night, Otto.
Of course, I didn't know it at the time, but little Virginia O'Hanlon was writing a letter to me.
Dear editor, I am 8 years old. Some of my little friends say there is no Santa Claus. Papa says if you see it in the sun, it's so. Please tell me the truth. Is there a Santa Claus? Virginia O'Hanlon.
Well, those are the main people in the story, except for Mr. Schuller, the mailman, and we'll get to him in just a minute. When he wasn't at Brody's Bar and Grill, Frank Church kept making noises on his typewriter, but he wasn't fooling me or Andrea Borland or himself. The next day, James O'Hanlon and Dom Donnelly were out again trying to find work, and Virginia was out trying to find an answer.
Ach, Virginia, how are you, Malachia?
Oh.
I'm sorry I startled you.
No, not really, Mr. Schuller.
Is that a letter for Santa, maybe?
No, not exactly, but it's about him.
Why not to Santa himself?
I'm not sure I'd get an answer.
Ah, I see. Yeah, Santa is pretty busy right now, and I see you have it addressed. How can you be so sure this party will answer?
Papa says the sun tells him everything he needs to know.
Virginia, if you see it in the sun, it's so.
Well then, it's best to get it mailed, and the sooner the better.
I don't have a stamp, Mr. Chiller. Can I buy one? I have a penny. Is that enough?
Ah, da. But keep your penny. Let Otto Schuller take care of it. I always have an extra stamp, just in case.
Thank you, Mr. Schuller.
My gift to you, Malankaya. I'll see that it gets there safely, and Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, Mr. Schuller. Merry Christmas.
Good afternoon, New York Sun. Sure, I think Thursday on the line.
Someday, Mr. Church, I'm going to have a watch like that.
What?
A watch that's pure gold and plays a tune. A real humdinger.
Sure, you will.
Boy! Boy! Copy boy!
Yes, sir, a real humdinger. Coming. Coming right over.
I looked on as Frank Church removed his wife's picture from the watch, put the watch in an envelope, wrote a name on the envelope, and placed it in his drawer. By the time he got to the door, I was already there. Going out, Frank?
Yeah, City Hall. Got a hot tip.
Well, don't let it cool off.
I won't.
That took place after I'd gone through the day's mail. I knew something had to be done before it was too late. I wasn't exactly sure what something was, but a plan had begun to take shape in the mind of a certain newspaper man. That night, Frank Church was alone in his apartment. He had intended that it would be his last night. He had turned off the knob on a gas burner so the flames were extinguished. Slowly, he turned the knob back on, and there was an ominous deadliness of sound. He went to the window and made sure it was closed tight, then moved to his chair, took a whiskey glass, and gazed at a photograph of his wife.
Who is it?
Ed Mitchell.
Just a minute.
From the hallway, I could hear noises. Frank Church was turning off the knob of the heater, opening the window, and finally he opened the door.
What is it, Ed?
Happened to be in the neighborhood.
Did you?
Well, can I come in?
Yeah.
The window was open and the gas burner unlit. Not exactly normal for a December night.
Want a drink?
Thanks, no.
Well, what do you want, Ed? It must be something.
No, just a visit and an invitation. Martha wanted me to ask you if you'd like to come over for a Christmas dinner.
Couldn't you ask at the paper?
I suppose I could. Are you all right, Frank?
Why? Why, you have any complaints about my work?
No complaints.
Because there are a couple other papers.
Frank, you've got to quit torturing yourself.
Do I? Well, it took me a good many years more than it does most men to find the right woman and marry her. She could have had her pick of 100 better men, young, rich, with the stuff that proper husbands are made out of.
It wasn't your fault, Frank. There was an epidemic. A lot of other wives died.
Sure they did. And they died with their husbands at their side, but not Elizabeth and the baby.
Frank.
Hey, we were married over 3 years and I never had Christmas dinner with her, not once. The first year, there was a flood in Pennsylvania. The second, a revolution in Asia. And when Elizabeth was dying of pneumonia, I was in Panama. Panama, writing about yellow fever.
Frank, Elizabeth married a newspaper man. She knew that and loved you. Did you ever hear her complain?
Well, no, I didn't, but I never heard or noticed a lot of things about her until it was too late. You sure you won't have a drink, a close-to-Christmas drink?
I'm sure, and Frank, you...
Don't worry, old pal. I'm still married to the newspaper, and I promise to be a good husband.
While Frank Church was talking, I walked over to the gas burner and lit it with a kitchen match, and then closed the window.
What are you doing?
It was a little chilly in here. Now that's better, isn't it? By the way, Frank, I've got an interesting assignment for you.
I already have an assignment, the Tammany Hall expose, remember?
This won't take long, and I've got a deadline.
What is it?
That's newspaper business. I'll tell you at the office tomorrow. Good night.
Ed.
Yes?
Thanks for turning on the heater. I wouldn't want to catch pneumonia, would I?
No, you wouldn't. Well, I wonder if you guessed the little scheme that I had in mind and how, if it worked, it might affect the lives of Frank Church, Virginia O'Hanlon, and the rest of these people, and maybe even you.
After a brief interlude, we will return to the Unalaska Community Theater of the Air and our holiday broadcast of Yes, Virginia, There Is a Santa Claus.
None but the lonely heart can know my sadness, alone and departed, far from joy.